All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So, first of all, just one quick announcement: there will be no shiur next week. This shiur will not meet next week. That's why, Emir Tzashem, this week we're going to just take a little bit of a break from Tehillim. Nobody needs a break from Tehillim, but we're going to a little bit of a departure from our normal course of Limud to focus a little bit this week on Chanukah. So, what I wanted to share with you is what I think is an incredibly fascinating idea. But to give a little bit of haktam, a little bit of introduction, I often think that one of the most underappreciated areas of Jewish study is halacha. Because people think that halacha is just all about what you can do and what you can't do. Now, part of the problem is often that's the way halacha is taught. Right? This is mutar, this is asr, this is tameh, this is tahar. And the truth is, there's very little meaning in it, or there's very little meaning that's expressed about it, except for its behavioral norms, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. The beautiful part about halacha is that when you study Jewish law in depth, you begin to see that the halacha is based on multiple levels of moral and ethical norms. What do I mean by that? That when you begin to study halacha in a substantive and deep fashion, you begin to see that what drives Chazal in the formulation of halacha are often deep hashkafic and philosophic concepts. So for example, interestingly enough, if you want to see the real essence of any particular Yom Tov or Chag, the best place, I know this sounds strange, but the best place to start with is the halacha. When you learn, that's why when Chazal say, the Gemara Maseches Megillah brings down, that Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, there was a concept that 30 days before Yom Tov, you would begin to learn the halacha was pertaining to that particular Yom Tov. The source of that is where? Where do we know that concept from? Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag? This is an interesting idea. Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people the laws of Pesach Sheni while it was still Pesach Rishon. Remember that we know Pesach, there's an obligation to go to the Beis HaMikdash or for the Korban Pesach. So the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu discusses what happens if someone is Tameh, B'derech Rechoka, somebody's ritually impure, somebody's too far, they can't get to the Beis HaMikdash in time for Pesach. So Moshe Rabbeinu, as he was teaching the Jews the laws of Pesach, was also teaching them the laws of Pesach Sheni, the makeup Pesach. So it's an interesting discussion in the Gemara. Does that apply to all Yom Tovim? Or is it just Pesach? Is it Pesach because since Pesach has such a voluminous amount of halacha, you need 30 days beforehand in order to prepare? Or is that, no, every single Yom Tov, you should be learning the halachos of the Yom Tov 30 days before the Yom Tov. Now, you also have to appreciate something when the Gemara talks about this. So, you know, what's fascinating is, we often tend to, I don't know what the right word is, it's not romanticized, but we tend to almost put on a pedestal generations of the past. You know, when we think about, you know, let's say the generation of pre-war Europe, you know, we have this image in our minds that every single person who was in the shtetl was, you know, worthy of an art scroll biography, and mamish, they were wonderful tzaddikim. Now, the truth is, there's no question that we'll call it emuna pshuta, simple faith, simple daily piety, was much more present in those Jews than we find it in our contemporary generation. That's not a shaila. But you know what else they had? They had rampant ignorance. Most people were ignorant. Most people were illiterate. The truth is, even when it came to Judaic items, how did people know what to do in Judaism? Right, so the truth is, Rav Soloveitchik discusses this concept called the mimetic tradition. Mimetic tradition means they mimicked. Meaning, so how did a woman know to light Shabbos candles? So it's not like today, where if a person is Baruch Hashem privileged to go to seminary or send their daughter to, you know, that every girl comes back with 50 reasons why you have to do this, and this chumran, we should do this or not do this. If you ask them, why do you light Shabbos candles? It's very simple. My mother lights Shabbos candles. So why do we keep kosher? Because that's what Jews do. And why do we wear tzitzis? And why do we die? There was no deep philosophical ideas. It was the mimetic tradition. Now, this is not, we could do a whole series on that because there are certain benefits to that, in that it definitely fosters a sense of emuna pshuta. It fosters a sense of simple. I remember my grandfather, Zichron Levracha, who was a student of the Nirvadik Yeshiva. So when I was little, my cousins and myself used to go to my grandparents for the summer. My grandfather would learn with us, and whenever we'd ask him a question, his answer would always be like, why is this so? We learn a Mishnah, we learn a particular halacha, why is this so? His answer was always the same. Shteit Netaira. That's what it says. So when I was little, I used to think that maybe he didn't know the answer. And so maybe he was just like, all right, whatever, that's what it says. And it's only when I got older that I realized that what he was trying to convey was a very important Judaic ideal. That if you want to know why we do it, the first reason we do it is because it's in the Torah. That's the first reason. Because it's the Ratzon, it's the will, it's the Tzivui, the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The reasons ultimately come much later on. Why am I telling you all of this? Because again, in the times of the Gemara discusses, they would assemble the people 30 days before the Yom Tov and begin to discuss the halachos of Yom Tov. Why? Because imagine Pesach for, I know I'm going to say Pesach, I know that's a bad word. Right? But imagine Pesach, by the way, without the Star K guidebook, and without the OU magazine, and without Rabbi Eider, and without all of the different tools. The truth is, all kidding aside, it's a very big deal. So you had to gather the populace to educate the populace. What are you supposed to do? Kashering, Kalim, Chametz, all the different things. So again, whether or not that model applied to other Yomim Tovim is a dispute in the Gemara. But the point also is that Chazal were not just teaching the do's and the don'ts. What they were saying is by gathering 30 days before the Yom Tov and learning the halachos of the Yom Tov, you were also able, through the prism of halacha, to absorb the profundity of any particular Yom Tov. So that's what we're going to try to do today. We're going to try to come to appreciate Chanukah a little bit through the prism of halacha. Just as I said, we're going to do the same thing tonight in Mirat Sashem. We're always going to do a Shira on Chanukah. Different topic, but using, again, halacha as a springboard for a philosophical or hashkafic understanding of the Yom Tov. Let's take a look at number one. So the Gemara says the following. Hamadlik ner shel Chanukah tzarech levarich. If a person goes ahead and lights Chanukah candles, this person has to make the bracha. Rabbi Yirmiyah Omer Haroeh Ner Shel Chanukah Tzarech Levarich. Rabbi Yirmiyah makes a dramatic statement. Rabbi Yirmiyah says it's not only if you light Ner Chanukah, but even if you see someone else's Ner Chanukah. Now Rashi in number 2 qualifies this, and Rashi says, let's say for example, I'm not going to be able to light a menorah myself, for whatever the reason. And for argument's sake, there's no one in my house who's going to be lighting on my behalf. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, it's okay, because you can make a bracha on someone else's menorah. So I walk by your house, I see your menorah in the window, I can make a bracha on your menorah. So the Gemara says, my mevarich. So what are these brachos? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Yom Rishon, Hamadlik Mevarich Shalosh, Haroah Mevarich Shtayim. So Rabbi Yehuda says like this, on the first night of Chanukah, the one who is kindling, the Neros Chanukah himself, makes 3 brachos, right? The bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, the bracha of Sha'asanisim, and the bracha of Shechianu. And Haroeh Mevarech Shtayim, the one who only sees the Ner Chanukah, makes 2 brachos, right? The one who sees the Ner Chanukah is omitting which bracha? Lahadlik. Right, because the bracha of lahadlik is a bracha on the act of kindling. If you're not kindling, you can't say that bracha. You can still say sha'asanisim, and you could still say shechyonu on the first night. Mikan va'elech on the subsequent nights. Mikan va'elech madlik mevarech shtayim. The person who's actually kindling the ner Chanukah makes 2 brachos of lahadlik ner shel Chanukah and sha'asanisim. V'roe, and the person who just simply sees the menorah mevarech achos. Which bracha? Sha'asanisim. Shasanism. And you should just know, that is halach l'mais, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins that way. So should you be in a situation where for whatever reason, no one's lighting for you at home, and you're not going to get to light yourself, you can actually make a bracha on someone else's menorah. Says Tosas in number 3. Tosas says, I don't understand this. Haroeh ner shel Chanukah tzarech levarich. So Tosas writes, number 3, Bishar mitzos kigon alulav v'sukah, Lotakinu levarich leroa elegabe ner Chanukah mishum chavivos hanis. So what Tosas is bothered by is the following. We do not see this concept anywhere else in halacha. Right? If I don't have a lulav and esrog, I don't have a lulav and esrog, I'm not getting a lulav and esrog. It's not going to happen. So it's just such a concept that I stand next to my friend and I make a bracha on his lulav and esrog. Right? You could fill in the blank. There's no other mitzvah like this, where the technical mitzvah is an obligation that I'm supposed to do something, but if I can't do it, I can piggyback on yours. Yes?
You don't have to own it. You can actually just borrow it.
But I still have to take it. The point is, there's no other mitzvah. There's no other mitzvah that I could fulfill my obligation by looking at something that you did. That's the difference. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to actually light a Ner Chanukah. Not to see it, but yet, if I can't light it, I can see it and be yotzei the mitzvah. That's his point. He says, so Tosfos gives an interesting answer. He says, Elagabi ner chanuka mishum chavivos hanes. So first he throws out this idea of chavivos hanes. What does chavivos hanes mean? The special nature of the miracle. Because of the special nature of the miracle, the gam yishum sheish kama bnei adam she'ein lahem batim ve'ein biyadam lakayim hamitzvah. Says Tosfos also, there are some people who don't have homes. Remember, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is a mitzvah of Ner Ish Ubeiso. It is a mitzvah on the domicile, a mitzvah on the home. So says Tosfos, there are some people that don't have homes, and because of without this opportunity to piggyback on someone else's mitzvah, they would not have the ability to go ahead and perform the mitzvah. Okay, but what's intriguing, so let's leave aside Tosfos' second answer. What's much more intriguing is Tosfos' first answer. Chavivos hanes. There's something so special about this miracle. Something so special about this celebration that says, Tosfos, you know what, you're right. We're going to break with conventional norms. So although you would say that eating matzah is also very special because Yitzias Mitzrayim is one of the most important events that has happened in our national history, but yet, if I can't eat matzah, looking at you eating matzah is not going to be enough. But for some reason, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, if I can't do it myself, observing your mitzvah is going to be alright. Now look at number four. I'll just show you something else, just halachically interesting. So in number four, this is a sefer of Mipnine Harav, written by Rav Herschel Schachter, who recorded all of the different halachic ideas and positions of Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, committed very little to writing. Very little to writing. So you have to appreciate, again, just a little bit about the Rav. The Rav, when he first came to this country, was in Boston and was very instrumental. He was a pulpit rabbi. He was involved in many of communal affairs. One of the things that the Rav tried to regulate was kashrus. Kashrus, when the Rav came to this country, was like the Wild West. And there was a lot of impropriety that was going on. The shochtim were being worked ridiculous hours and being taken advantage of. So the Rav essentially, you know, he made like a shochet union. And you can imagine the owners of the slaughterhouses were not very happy with him. To the point that they informed on the Rav to the IRS. They told the IRS that Rabbi Soloveitchik is not paying his taxes. After a 3-year investigation into the Rav's finances, it turned out that the Rav had overpaid on his taxes each and every year. But it was a terrible chilul Hashem, and the truth is, it left a scar. Really, it scarred the Rav, and the Rav after that point really retreated a lot from public life. That's why Rav Soloveitchik never really made many, you know, halachic proclamations. He didn't really make any public piskei halacha. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, and his comfort zone was within the walls of, which is why there's a lot of debate on what the Rav said in different situations. So Rav Schachter, after the Rav passed away, decided to really put down in writing many of the Rav's halachic positions, Divrei Torah. So this is number four. So he writes the following. He says, Shamati pam yisod mimorenu hagon Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Schachter writes, I one time heard from Rav Soloveitchik, Benogeh Lener Chanukah. We're not going to do this whole thing, but I just want to show you a piece. Shebazeh Yesh. So the Rav was bothered by this Tosfos also. Right? Because I said, what does this mean? That because of Chavivos HaMitzvah, because the mitzvah is so special, then suddenly again, I can piggyback on your act of kindling? It doesn't halachically make sense. So he writes the following. The Chachamim tiknu bracha l'ra rak b'makom sheyesh ezo kesher halachti ben misha ose pe'ulas HaMitzvah u'ben misha roa es HaMitzvah. Rak b'ner chaneka kaima kesher hazeh. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that the reason why Chazal allowed this to occur was because we see this theme goes throughout Ner Chanukah. That when it comes to when it comes to most mitzvos, the mitzvah is between who? Me and me. Right? Or me and God. It has nothing to do with you. So like when I take Lulav and Esrog, whether you see me do it or don't see me do it, it makes absolutely no difference. I have to fulfill the mitzvah. So whether I do it in a public setting or I do it in a private setting, that's my mitzvah. You could fill in the blank. This applies to 99% of mitzvos. They're private displays of religious devotion. But yet, says Rav, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, the dominant theme is the connection between who? Between the person who is lighting and the population, the outside world. So the Rav writes, he goes on. He says, HaGemara b'Shabbos Omer, Chot. Now, of course, the simple example of this is that the whole idea of Pirsumin Issa, the idea that you have to light your Neros Chanukah. Again, this is one of the interesting distinctions between Chanukah in Galus versus Chanukah in Eretz Yisrael, right? If you've ever had the privilege to be in Chanukah for Eretz Yisrael, it's a dramatically different Yom Tov. First of all, it's a Yom Tov. That's number one. It's not the half hour at night when you get home from work before you have to pick up everything else. It's mamish a Yom Tov. Other major distinction is, of course, Neros Chanukah are lit outside, which is interesting. Again, not our topic for today, but there's no question that after generations of persecution, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah has evolved in Galus to the point that even though today we could light outside without fear of any kind of reciprocity, we don't. Or at least most don't, because of the entire nature of Ner Chanukah in Galus has evolved to an indoor mitzvah. But despite the fact that it's an indoor mitzvah, we still try to place our menorah in a place where it can be seen by the general populace. But the Rav gives a more targeted example. The Rav says, "Kol Gemara and Shabbos." Gemara and Shabbos writes, he says, "Chatzer sheyesh la shnei psachim, tzricha shtei neros mishum chashad." So this is amazing. If I have a home that has two entrances, the Gemara says, I have to light a Ner Chanukah by each entrance. By each entrance, right? Why? Now remember, this is talking about in the times of the Gemara where they're lighting outdoors. So why? Mishum chashad. Chashad means what? Suspicion. We're suspicion of that. What's going to happen if I light by my front door, but Reuven normally walks by my back door? So what's going to happen? He's going to walk by my back door, and what is he going to think to himself? Silver's like not lighting Ner Chanukah. Silver's not lighting Ner Chanukah. So what happens? I have to go ahead and make sure, therefore, to light by both doors. Now the truth is, what's our knee-jerk reaction to this? So first of all, you're only making one bracha. That's an excellent point. So our knee-jerk reaction is, who cares? What do I care what Reuven thinks? Right? At the end of the day, I know that I'm lighting Ner Chanukah. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows I'm lighting Ner Chanukah. What does it matter to me if Reuven's going to pass by my back door and he's not going to see a menorah there and he's going to... So the Rav says, you see that Chazal cared. You see that what Chazal are saying is that there's something about this mitzvah that connects me to the outside world. It's not like other mitzvahs, where as long as I know that I'm eating my kezayis of matzah, whether you know it or not is irrelevant. As long as I go ahead and light Neros Shabbos, whether you know it or not is irrelevant. I take a little bit of answer. It's my business, nothing to do with you. When it comes to Ner Chanukah, you clearly see that there is a connection between the kindler and the person on the outside. That somehow my mitzvah is only complete if not only I do it, but you know that I did it. Therefore, if you skip down to the last paragraph, C, therefore the Rav writes the following, V'lochein, Yish lomar bepashtus, Shirak b'mokum sheyesh kesher ben hamadlik v'haroa, as tiknu chachamim bracha l'roa. V'zehu brak b'ner Chanukah. So the Rav writes, now at least halachically we could understand this. Now that I know that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is a mitzvah, that's not just about me, but that what? Somehow links me with the outside world. Now at least I understand the conceptual framework of the halacha that was stated in number one. So now I understand why, if let's say I can't light my own Ner Chanukah, then what? Then I can piggyback off yours. Then I can go ahead and make a bracha off your act of kindling, since again, by definition, this mitzvah binds us together. So the Rav just explains the halachic mechanics. But of course, what's still lacking is what? The why. The why, yes. No. So Rashi points out, this is only assuming you're not going to be doing your own act of kindling. If you're going to be doing your own act of kindling, then you make your bracha when you get home. But let's say, again, a person is in a circumstance, and this, you'd be surprised, it does come up, where a person's in a circumstance where they're just not going to light, and no one is lighting for me at home, then you could use this. So the questions we're going to try to, we still have to understand, yes?
I'm sorry, I guess my mind always sees the physical and spiritual and emotional parallels. And it seems to me very clear that the concept of kindling, you take one flame to another flame, is one of those things where you can take one flame and it can light thousands without diminishing from the flame that it is. And I wonder if the idea of the connection of people being able to add to that mitzvah is from that concept that it is.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful idea. So we'll see. We're going to go in line with that a little bit towards the end. But 100, you're saying good. There's no question that whenever you see, and this is why DAFKA started the way that we did, which is that within the halacha, you always see the multiple levels of the spiritual and emotional and philosophical. Halacha is not some study in abstract law. The halacha is what codifies all of these other norms. Excellent. We're going to come back to that towards the end. This is a real halacha. Yeah. It's lemaisa. It's codified in the Shulchan Aruch.
So does the one who's lighting, does he have
something? No, that's the amazing part. It's not like you're saying very good. It's not like, let's say, the halacha is when somebody blows a shofar. So the tokeya has to have in mind that whoever hears the call, he doesn't have to have in mind who's going to hear it, but whoever hears the call, I have in mind to you, won't see them. No, this is even if I'm not thinking about the people on the outside. Nevertheless, the people on the outside could still go ahead and be yotze with me. Yes. The zero seem publicizing the miracle and having in mind to help someone else discharge their obligation. Those two mindsets don't necessarily. I could have in mind that, yes, I want you to see my Ner Hanukkah, but I honestly have in mind that you should be able to use it also. They don't. I'm just saying, they could, but they don't have to go in line. They don't have to go together. So the question we're going to have to try to explore is the why. So now you've seen the halachic mechanics of this. We've seen Tosis that pointed out that this is unique by Ner Chanukah. We've seen the Rav who explains, but the truth is that this is not the only example of this in Ner Chanukah, that the dominant theme of Ner Chanukah seems to be one of the shared experience. So the question is, why? So to answer this question, we have to go on a little bit of a detour. Take a look at number 5. So there's one Gemara that talks about Ner Chanukah. Now the truth is the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos in the Perek of Bamei Madlikin discusses Ner Chanukah extensively, but really focuses on the types of wicks and the types of oil you can use. There's only one little Gemara that talks about the episode of Chanukah, right? This is one of the interesting things about Chanukah. You know, Purim, we have a whole Megillah that tells us the story. Chanukah, we don't. Chanukah, we do have Megillahs. This is what's called Megillahs Antiochus, right? The Sefer Maccabim, which, again, there's a lot of discussion in terms of, are they accurate? Are they not accurate? How much is Midrashic? How much is literal? But at least from a rabbinic text perspective, the only thing we have, the entire story of Ner Chanukah, the entire story of Chanukah is in number 5. The Gemara says, my Chanukah. What is Chanukah? The Tanur Rabbanan, the rabbi, stated, "Bechafei b'Kislev yomi deChanukah timni inun." On the 25th of Kislev, the days of Chanukah, there are 8 days. Dilo lemispod b'hon, we don't eulogize. Dilo leisanos b'hon, we don't fast, we don't eulogize. Why? Shekishenichnesu yivaram lehechal timu kol hashmonim shebehechal. Because when the Greeks entered into the Hechal, to the sanctuary, to the Beis HaMikdash, they defiled all of the oils. Ukishegavra malchus beis chashmonai v'nitzchum, when the Hasmonean monarchy rose up and defeated them. They went and they found only one little cruse of oil that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol intact. And there was only enough oil in the cruse to last for one day. A miracle occurred. And of course, I don't mean to ruin the end of the story for you before Hanukkah, but the one little jug of oil lasted for 8 days. Lashana acheres. Now, interestingly enough, lashana acheres could either mean next year, or it can mean in subsequent years. So, for example, the Sfas Emes comments, he says lashana acheres actually means somewhere later on down the road. Chanukah was not established as Yom Tov until later on down the road. Says Sfas Emes, why? Because there were legions and legions of Jews who were Hellenized. They assimilated. So the Sfas Emes says that to create a new Yom Tov, when the ranks of the Jewish people have been so significantly depleted, would have been counterintuitive. Therefore, says the Sfas Emes, they made a new Yom Tov years later. How many years later? Who knows? But whatever it is, Lashon Acher is Kavum, V'asoim Yomim Tovim, Bahalo V'Hoda. Fine. Number 6, writes the Maharal. The Maharal has a whole sefer called Ner Mitzvah. So the Maharal quotes this Gemara. So look on the right-hand column, 3 lines up from the end. V'im Tomar, right after that little footnote 49. V'im Tomar, V'chi b'shvil shena'aseh lohem nesba hadlaka, shelo tiyye b'teila hadlaka, hayu kovin Chanukah? So writes the Maharal, I don't understand. We make a whole Yom Tov because of a little jug of oil. V'kima shechayiv lahodos ulahalel, zehu kasher na'aseh lo neis b'shvil hatzaloso, v'lo b'shvil shena'aseh lo neis la'asos mitzvah, ki ina mitzvah hanoh el ha'adam. So the Maharal asks perhaps what is one of the most fundamental questions on Hanukkah, which is why are we celebrating oil? Why are we celebrating oil? So the Maharal says, if you look at the miracles that we generally celebrate, some miracles have one common theme, and that is, right, we were saved. We were saved, right? Think about our Yomim Tovim. Generally, we were saved. We'll talk about this more in this evening's shir. But again, generally, we were saved from some element of danger. We don't usually celebrate the ability to perform a mitzvah. Remember, what happened in Hanukkah? I'm going to say something that may sound a little bit blasphemous. And what happens if it only would have remained lit for one day? What would have happened? Right? What would have happened? Nothing, right? It would have taken, so the menorah wouldn't have, how many weeks and months and years was the menorah not kindled for? All right, so it would have been another week. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's very nice. It's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's interesting, it warms the heart, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, it's great. But the truth is, as the Maharal, I understand you want to recognize the miracle, but you're going to make a whole Yom Tov over a little jug of, again, we're not demeaning in any way the miraculous nature of what occurred, but says the Maharal, it doesn't really seem Yom Tov worthy, right? You make Yomim Tovim around events that are major. I'm saying, even often when we have the Yomim Tovim, so remember, Hanukkah is linked with the other rabbinic Yom Tov of Purim. Hanukkah and Purim usually are categorized together, many similarities, halachic similarities. So if you look at Purim, that's a Yom Tov. That's a Yom Tov, right? We were going to be destroyed. We were going to be annihilated. And incredible miracles. That's salvation. So what the Maharal is really saying, in the underline, I mean, if you would have told me that the miracle is about the salvation from the Greeks, the fact that a little group of Kohanim, right, the little group of Kohanim went ahead and suddenly overtook, you know, the mightiest military force in civilized world, I hear that. I understand that. That's more like a Purim type of miracle, but over a jug of oil. So the Maharal is asking good, and there are many different answers to this. I want to share with you two. So if you look at number seven, Rav Kook in his Ein Ayah has a beautiful insight into this. And we're not going to do this whole piece, I'm just going to show you a couple of pieces of it. So he says the following. He says, look at by paragraph A. So he quotes in the bolded lines, he quotes the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tumas hashmanim, hashchosos hamidos v'hadeos, sheba'o l'machane Yisrael misibas hisgabrus hayvanim v'shultonam, hiatzara hayoser iyuma hanogas ad nefesh ha'uma. So first of all, writes Rav Kook, the greatest existential danger that we face as a people is never when people try to when people physically persecute us. Because the truth is, the one thing about spiritual physical persecution is you can always recover. You can always recover from physical harm. The greater danger, writes Rav Kook, is when there's a concerted and concentrated effort to defile us spiritually. Because when you attack the spirituality of the Jewish people, that's when there really is an existential danger about, are we going to go ahead and literally live to see another day? Skip down a little bit. He says, you see by the asterisk, Hinei, kishem shehakohen haklali, sheva'am Hashem, huchan lahoros chukei Hashem u'mishpatav, laharos bepoel tochen shel chayim kidoshim utahorim, leman heyos lemofes la'am kulo, kein yesh bechol adam yisrael tzad kuhuna, mipnei shebechlolim heima mamleches konim v'goy kadosh. So the first Rav Kook says a very beautiful idea. Rav Kook says that we know that what is the kohen? You know, there's a beautiful Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch says that one of the reasons we have a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, one of the reasons we have a mitzvah to go and make a journey up to Yerushalayim three times a year is why? This is amazing. To see Kohanim. Why? Because who is the Kohen? The Kohen is the individual who devotes his life to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kohen represents the best that humanity has to offer. The Kohen is an individual who in many respects gives up many of the material trappings of life, right? The same Kohen, who is a great Kohen, could have also been the CEO of the company, but he gives that up. He gives up that opportunity to be an Oved Hashem. And so we go ahead, we, the rest of us, who are engaged in the world on a day-to-day level, disengage from the world for a little bit to go see what it is that a Jew looks like. What is the paradigm of a Jew? That's what we do. So right, Rav Kook, the amazing part is, we all have the ability to be Kohanic in nature. The same way that the Kohen is the one who devotes himself in totality to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look what Rav Kook writes. Kein yesh b'chol adam Yisrael tzad kahuna. Each of us has a little aspect of kahuna within us. A tzad kahuna. This ability to become a beautiful servant of Hashem. Okay, very nice. Now skip down a little bit to the two asterisks. Ava'od yoser amok. But let me tell you what Cook says, but I'll tell you something even more profound. Ava'od yoser amok believe shochein or ha'nesham Yisraelis. But there's something even more powerful than being a Kohen. And what is that? What is that? Being a Jew. Being a Jew is even more powerful than being a Kohen. That deep down, writes Rav Kook, there is this Or HaNeshama HaYisraelis. This, you know, Rav Kook's writings in general are very difficult. Right? Rav Kook was a real poet. You know, they say that Rav Kook was a Talmid of Volozhin. And in Volozhin, Rav Kook used to write poetry in Hebrew, not in Biblical Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, which is quite amazing. We're a Talmud from Volozhin. Meaning Rav Kook, just his neshama was such a way that poetry like David HaMelech, he wrote. So when he writes, his writings are very, I mean, I'm sure they're not difficult for people who are more scholarly, but for young people like us, they're very difficult to understand. It happens to be this is a gift because this particular piece is a little bit more understandable, but you could even see the beautiful imagery in his Lashon. He says again, deep within the soul of every Jew, deep within the heart of every Jew, there is this Or HaNeshama HaYisraelis, this light of Jewish spirituality. Shesham Ganos HaKesher HaPnimi Ela Isha Yisraeli HaMofia B'chol Az B'chla La'uma, that deep within that spiritual reservoir, there is this connection that a person has to his true identity as a Jew. Im ha'emuna ha'ikaris b'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Deep within that reservoir, there is a very strong belief, a very strong emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'haratzon ha'chazok v'haneratz shelo lihipar mebeis chayehem. And deep down in that spiritual reservoir, there is an incredible desire, a strong desire to never disconnect from the source of all life, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Me'amuna b'chlala. Zehu ha'olam ha'pinini ha'yisraeli. This is the inner world of the Jew. Shedugmaso b'soch ha'klal, hu ha'kohen ha'godol ha'nichnas lifnai v'lifnim, l'shareis b'kodesh b'yom ha'kadosh ha'muvda mikol iskei chayim ha'gashmiyim. So look what Rav Kook writes. If we posit that every Jew has a tzad kahuna, that every Jew has a certain Kohanic aspect of his identity, there's something even more profound, says Rav Kook. That when you go deep down into the spiritual recesses of the Jewish soul, not only do each of us have a tzad kahuna, but each of us are a Kohen Gadol. Each of us are the high priest. And not just the Kohen Gadol, but the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Because what did the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur do? The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur did something that man should not be able to do. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur divorced himself from everything that is worldly, earthly, and material, and went to a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Holy of Holies. So says Rav Kook, forget about Tzad Kahuna. When you dig deep enough down, we each have the Kohen Gadol within. He says, listen to this. Also, HaPach HaKatan Shemunach Bechosamo Shal Kohen Gadol. Listen to how beautiful this is, says Rav Kook. When you dig deep enough down, you know what you're going to find? You're going to find the little cruse of oil that has the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it. Right? Remember, so what does he say? What is that oil which represents the ability to kindle a fire? Says Rav Kook, and this is incredible. Rav Kook, you see where he's going with this. Rav Kook is going to explain that you know what Hanukkah is? The entire Hanukkah story is a metaphor for the human condition. I mean, it's literal, of course, but the story itself is a metaphor for the human condition. Because what happened in Hanukkah, says Rav Kook, the Yavanim, you know, Yavan represents, on one hand, much beauty of the world, but also much of the world that corrupts, right? Greece is responsible for incredible things. Greece is responsible for incredible philosophy, and Greece is also responsible. That culture also bred incredible amounts of immorality. So what happens when Greece enters in to to the confines of the Beis HaMikdash, you know what happens? Many of the little jugs of oil are tainted. Many of the seals are broken. But no matter how many jugs are broken, no matter how many seals are broken, there's always one jug left with the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it. There's always one jug left of pure, untainted spirituality. It's deep within. He says, Osa pacha katan, shemunach picho somo shel Kohen Gadol, lo yuchlu hayivanim letamos. And that one jug with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, that's untouchable. That's untouchable. No one could corrupt it. No matter how strong they are, no one could break the seal of that cruise. Turn to the side, to paragraph B. Now, here's the interesting part, however. Says Rav Kook, we all have that pach shemen. We all have that little cruise of oil, that little cruise of untainted spirituality, which is the Kohen Gadol within. But the amazing part, says Rav Kook, is that oil can't sustain you for too long, right? Because that oil only has enough for what? For one day. He says, Shah achas. You can't live on that oil. You could break open the seal, you could light the fire, but the fire will only burn for so long. Shas hisromimus sheba, yarum ha'adam mishuflus ha'chaim, al yidei or ha'penimi shal kesher ha'emuna v'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael. But you know what the amazing part is? Bless you. The amazing part is that all you need to do is light the flame in order to spark shas hisromimus. All I need is one moment of spiritual awakening, because that one moment of spiritual awakening will lift me up from the depths of meaningless living. All I need is one moment of that true light, that inner light of connectedness with God. But what should happen is that oil will burn for a little bit, and then what happens? It's extinguished, and I'll descend back to what I was. But says Rav Kook, what's the miracle of Chanukah? Omnam na'ase bones. Af api shelo hayu klal ha'chaim az muchanim, sheyispashet bahem or kadosh shel emunah ikaris, even though the circumstances were not right during the Chanukah story, to allow a perpetuation of the flame. And by the way, when it says the circumstances, what that means is not just that there wasn't enough oil. The Beis HaMikdash was defiled. The Jewish people were Hellenized. We were in shambles. So the truth is, even though we found the one jug of oil and we lit the fire should not have continued remaining lit, burning, because the circumstances were not right for perpetuated kindling. Ava mikoach yad Hashem be'munoso. Shelo yazov es amo ba'avur shmo ha'gadol, hine yaspik zeh apach ha'katan lahadlik mimenu shmoni yamim. But amazingly enough, because of the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our emuna in Him and His emuna in us, He did not forsake us. And He allowed the small cruise of oil to remain lit all 8 days. Harom zim al arachas hazman ad avar kol tkuvas ahove ubat tkuvas ha'asya ne'eder sekodesh. The Rav Kook now gets into, which we're not going to get into now, obviously 8 is very symbolic also. The Maharal discusses this, that 8 is Lamala Minateva, right? 7 is the natural order of the world. 8 represents the supernatural order. We're not going to get into that right now. But according to Rav Kook, you see what's happening over here. So the Maharal asks, why are we making a whole Yom Tov based on a Pach Shemet? It's wonderful. It's incredible. One little bit of oil went ahead and it must have had a number of those Hemashah HaKshirim on them, if it could last so long. Right? So one little jug of oil lasts 8 days. Says the Maharal, why is that cause for Yom Tov? Rav Kook says, I'm going to tell you exactly why. Because it's not really about the external oil. It's about the internal oil. That the real miracle of Chanukah is the message that it gave to all of those who saw it. Because what everyone who saw it, what did they say? They saw in the Beis HaMikdash a metaphor for our own life. The Beis Hamikdash was in ruins. Greece had come in and defiled so much of the pure oil. What happens to us so often, that sometimes we look around and you know what, my life is not as I want it. And sometimes it's even more dramatic. Sometimes my life is in ruins. It does happen. And sometimes that's because that certain influences or certain exposures that I should not have allowed have crept in and have broken the seals on the oils. Because things that I shouldn't have done, I did do. And as a result, the oil has been made impure. But the amazing part is that when they searched through all of the debris, what did they find? And this is the lesson of the Gemara. Pach echad shel shemen sheyamunach b'chosomo shel kohen gadol. But the amazing part is, just like when they searched the debris, they only found one little jug of oil. Says Rav Kook, when we search through the debris of sometimes what our life has become, there's one thing we are always guaranteed to find. Not just a nice jug of oil. A little jug of oil with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. A little jug of oil that reminds us that inside, deep down, and maybe it's beneath many, many layers, there's a Kohen Gadol that is yearning to come out. Aye, but it's only one little jug of oil. What can you do with one jug? And the answer is, not that much. But the amazing part is about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that all we need to do is kindle the flame just a little bit, and the Ribono Shel Olam helps us along the way. All we need to do is be courageous enough to shift through, to sift through the debris, find the Kohen Gadol within, break the seal, light the fire, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes over from there. The Rav Kook would say to the Maharal, my dear Maharal, you're right, it's not just about the oil. The oil is actually nothing all that great to write home about. But the real miracle of Hanukkah is the fact, the metaphorical significance, that the Nes of the Pach Shemen gave us the Chizuk to rebuild ourselves. That the Nes of the Pach Shemen gave us the Chizuk to sift through the debris that our lives had become, to rebuild, to reignite, and knowing that we couldn't do it on our own, but knowing that if we started the process, the Ribono Shel Olam would be a very able partner. That, says Rav Kook, is why we celebrate the miracle of the Pach Shemen. But let me throw in one more piece. One more piece. Look at number 8. Not that I need to throw in anything else at that Rav Kook. That's pretty standalone. But I'll show you something amazing. I'll tell you, just you should understand, the amazing part about Torah is, in general is, I mean, Baruch Hashem, we've all been privileged to celebrate a number of Chanukahs. And it's always astounding to me that every single year, you could find something new. It's just, you would think, like after 2,000 years, we pretty much uncovered it all. Hey, but it's just, it's amazing. So look at number 8. This is from Rav Goren. Rav Goren, Rav Shlomo Goren Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was the first chief rabbi of Tzahal, of the Israel Defense Forces. He was the first one to occupy that position. He later on became chief rabbi of the State of Israel as well. Rav Goren was a fascinating personality, an incredible, incredible Talmud Chacham. And he wrote a number of different svarim on all different things, on the Parashah, Yom Tovim, on Jewish philosophy, on issues. You know, one of the things that Rav Goren had to really deal with was reconciling the notion of a Jewish democracy. I think we've spoken about this before. Democracy does not really exist within Judaism. Right? But I know this doesn't sound good, but I'm going to say, what does that mean? That Judaism does not believe that not everybody was created equal. It's not true. Not every person is the same. The one thing that I wish I could do, and I wish I could be a Kohen. I would give anything to be a Kohen. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference, no matter how much I lobby, no matter how many signatures I get on a petition, right? No matter how many days I go to the Kotel in a row, it's not going to make a difference. That's it. That's not my role. It doesn't make me any better. It doesn't make me any worse. It just means diversification of responsibility. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want me to do that. He gave me a different role. Okay, so not everybody's created equal. There's one thing that Judaism doesn't believe in. Not everybody has a say. I know this comes very dramatic to Jews, right? Not everybody's opinion matters. Not everybody has a voice. Not everybody has a say in everything that goes on. Some people are leaders and they have a say. Some people are followers and they're supposed to be good soldiers and follow orders. Not everybody has a say. Right? So these, of course, run counter to the tenets of democracy. So what does Judaism believe in? Judaism believes in what's called a theocracy. Theocracy means a system of government that is run by religion, right? In Judaism, we believe that, and that's why, again, there's a big machlokes as to whether or not Judaism believes in a monarchy, right? Is monarchy lechatchila? Is it really a system of government that we aspire to? Or was it simply an accommodation to the Jewish people? But even if it's a monarchy, it's a theocratic monarchy, meaning if even the monarch doesn't govern by himself, the monarch is still bound by the rules of the Torah. So one of the things that Rav Gordon did is Rav Gordon wrote a number of essays trying to reconcile, because remember, the state of Israel is the first time that the Jewish people have ever encountered or tried to synthesize Torah values with democratic values. And as we see, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. So Rav Gordon wrote a whole series of essays trying to reconcile these things. So this is from his Sefer Moadei Yisrael, which speaks about the Yomim Tovim. So here Rav Gordon says something which I think is absolutely amazing. So Rav Gordon writes the following. He writes, Ha-hezber l'shita satamud ha-bavli. So Rav Gordon is also addressing the Maharal's basic question. He doesn't mention the Maharal by name, but everybody's addressing the Maharal's question, which is, because everybody's bothered by it. Why do we create a Yom Tov to go ahead and celebrate the Nes of the Pachshim, the Nes of the Cruise of Oil? So Rav Gordon writes, Ha-hezber l'shita satamud ha-bavli, Sheroa b'neis pach shemen, as Iker Tochno Shal Chag HaChanukah. So Rav Gordon writes, to understand the Gemara, that understands that the essence of Chanukah is the miracle of the jug of oil, Humishum Shiyesh B'neis Zeh, K'dei Listor Ulahafrich Es Hashkafas Ha'olam HaFilosofit Mitilojit Shel Yavan. Writes Rav Gordon something amazing. Because it was within the miracle of the Pach Shemen that we totally negate the philosophy of Greece. What was the philosophy of Greece? He says, Haroa be'esh es koach ha'elyon ha'sholit. Because in Greek philosophy, right, the Greeks saw that they looked at fire as divine. Manhig u'mekayim es hayukum. It is fire that ultimately rules over man. Look at paragraph B. We'll spend just a moment. Mishum sha'esh soreves. Because think about fire. What does fire do? Fire has the ability to destroy. Sholetes pekol u'mechales hakol. Fire could go ahead and grab onto anything. It could destroy everything. Ve'ein davar yochol lamod bifanel. And if you think about it, you know, when you hear in the news about these forest fires that start, it's amazing. You think about it, with all of the technologies that we have, all the advancements of mankind, we can't stop it, right? When these things catch on, it's incredibly humbling. So Rav Gordon says that in Greek philosophy, fire was looked at as a deity. It was looked at as a god, because the properties of fire are very godlike. Ha'ish ole v'lo yoredes. Fire always climbs upwards, it doesn't go downwards. Kimo sharha elementim ba'olam. So, by the way, just to point out, so if you know a little bit about Greek mythology, so how did fire come to the world? Prometheus. Prometheus stole it from Zeus. Right? Fire was the purview of... You're in the right sphere, don't worry, we're not getting into it. But I'm just saying, but it's just on what Rav Gordon is talking about, right? Fire belonged to the gods, and it didn't just belong to a god, it belonged to the god of gods, to Zeus. And Prometheus stole fire from Zeus and shared it with man, right? For that, Prometheus was punished very severely by the gods. So you see, even in Greek philosophy, fire was something that originally was on Mount Olympus, it belonged to the gods, and only because someone stole it, did man get it. So Rav Gordon says something amazing. He says, so the miracle of the Pach Shemen, and therefore celebrating a Yom Tov that is centered around going ahead and lighting a menorah, is to dispel this notion. How so? And this is quite amazing. He says, V'hine ba nes Pach HaShemen ala menorah, v'ochiach es asher kvar huchach בסנה קקסוב ויר ויני יסנה בוער באיש ועסנה ננו קל הווי אומר skip down to paragraph C, I'm sorry. וכן האיש המנורה לא יוכלו לשרוף ולחלוס אס מעט השמן התר שבמנורה מכאן הוכח שהאיש המייצגס כביכול אס הכוח בעולם אינו כל יכול ואינו בכוחו לחלוס אס הרוח. So Rav Gordon says something amazing. Do you know what the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah showed? The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah showed, or the miracle of Ner Chanukah showed, that fire does not control us, but we control the fire. That at the end of the day, the reason why the fire was lit was why? was because the Chashmonaim made a decision to go ahead and kindle that fire. It remains lit because the Ribono Shel Olam put his input into it and allowed it to remain lit for the additional 7 days. But says Rav Goren something amazing. Whereas Greek philosophy says that the fire rules over man, the miracle of Hanukkah says that what? That man rules over fire. Now I'm going to explain this in just a moment, but let me give you one other halachic illustration of this. To fulfill the mitzvah near Hanukkah, right? It's not just enough to go ahead and set up your menorah. What do you have to do? You have to add in the right amount of oil, right? So for example, if you don't add in the right amount of oil, you are not yotzei the mitzvah. What does that show? That shows a total mastery over the fire. The fire only burns because I will it to burn. The fire will only burn because I put in the fuel. And if I put in a little bit more, it'll burn a little bit longer. And if I put in a little bit less, it'll burn a little bit shorter. Philosophically, says Rav Goren, what does that say? What does fire represent, if you think about it? What does fire really represent, Big Gadol? Fire represents fate. Because think about it. When a fire catches onto something, what does it burn? Anything and everything in its path. It's totally indiscriminate, right? It will destroy anything that's there. It doesn't matter if it's sacred, it doesn't matter if it's mundane, it doesn't matter if it's beautiful, it doesn't matter if it's... Whatever is there, they have to understand, Greek philosophy is predicated on what? The notion of? Still, I'm going to give you some reading assignments in Greek philosophy. Fate. Fate. What is Greek mythology all about? Greek mythology is all about this idea that you could plan and plan and plan, and at the end of the day, the gods will always foil your plans, right? If you read Greek mythology, the gods, it's strange to even call them gods, because they're not gods. They're more petty than human beings, right? They're more Greek philosophy was all about this idea. That's why so much of Greek society was Epicurean in nature. It was all about enjoyment. It was all about pleasing the senses, because the truth is that's the only thing you really have control over. Everything else is just a fated existence. What is the greatest example of that? Is fire. Fire, when you lose control over it, it's very difficult to regain. It just does whatever it wants. So says Rav Goren something amazing. The miracle of Hanukkah was dafka done through the... God could have done a miracle in so many ways to show us that he was back in the game, so to speak, and that we were going to have the ability to rebuild. Why did he do it through fire? Says Rav Goren, to go ahead and dispel the entire notion of fated existence that was a cornerstone of Greek philosophy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to show us that we control the fire does not control us. The miracle of Ner Chanukah was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls the fire, but yet we controlled it also. How do we control the fire? By the miracle of Ner Chanukah, the original miracle? Because we made the choice to crack open the seal and to light the fire. The fire only came into existence because we willed it into existence. It would never have been, yes, once we did it, the Ribono Shel Olam took over afterwards, but we willed it into existence. The same way that when we go out and we fulfill the mitzvah contemporarily, the mitzvah only occurs, the duration of the mitzvah, the nature, the intensity, the duration of the fire is fully dependent on what? On what we choose to do. Says Rav Goren, that's the message of Hanukkah. We control the fire. The fire does not control us. We do not believe in a fated existence in which we are just simply subject to the whims of the universe and we have no control. Yes, there are many things we don't control. But you know what the amazing part is? The most important things we do control. We control the people we are. We control the way we respond to certain situations. Those are the important things. You're right. We don't control our health. We don't control our wealth. We don't control a lot of things. It's a lot of important things. But at the end of the day, the things that really create meaningful living, our response to events, the personalities we forge, that we control. We control the fire. The fire does not control us. So now, we emerge with, I think, just a radically different understanding of the miracle of Hanukkah and our celebration of Hanukkah. Because if we go with the Maharal's question of why are we celebrating one little fashlunk in a jug of oil, again, it's great, it's wonderful, but why is that cause for a Yom Tov? Because now we understand that it's so much more than just a jug of oil. According to Rav Kook, the miracle of Ner Hanukkah is the incredible metaphor for personal spiritual rehabilitation. It teaches us that no matter how high the ruins may be around us, we have the Kohen Gadol within that is waiting to be discovered. Each of us has the Pach Shemen with the Chosama Shel Kohen Gadol, and all we need to do is find the courage to sift through the debris, find the oil, break open the seal, light the fire. It's only enough to last for one day. It's okay. Get it started. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help us to fan it. Or according to Rav Goren, the whole essence, the whole miracle of the Pach Shemen dispels the Greek notion that the fire is the God, that the fire controls us, that we are subject to fate, that we don't control the circumstances of our life. Yes, many things we don't control, but the important things we absolutely do. The fire doesn't control us, we control the fire. This is the miracle of Pach Shemen, and that's why, again, you can read this Gemara, you can say, okay, we're celebrating a miracle of a jug of oil. The Maharal says there must be more, and Rav Kook and Rav Goren tell us the real metaphorical meanings and understandings, but now we have to come full circle. So remember, we started an hour ago, or 45 minutes ago, with a question. And what was our question? That the din of Roeh. Remember, we didn't understand the concept of Ner Hanukkah. How could it be that there's a mitzvah? How could it be that I could piggyback on your mitzvah? So I didn't light my own menorah. I go ahead and now what? I walk by your house. I'm not going to be lighting. I can make a bracha of Sha'as Anisim, or on the first night Sha'as Anisim and Shechianu. So although we described it halachically, how are we to understand it? How does it play into the greater message of Hanukkah? So I want to show you something very interesting. Take a look at number 9. Again, I'm going to show you something from the Haggadah, because I think that it makes the point. So remember, the Haggadah begins with Halach Ma'anya. I've mentioned this actually in some of our pre-Pesach shiurim. So Halach Ma'anya. So remember, Halach Ma'anya essentially says, after we go ahead and we discuss the fact that this is the matzah that our forefathers ate, we do something very strange. What do? We say, Kol dichven yeseh v'yechol, kol ditzvich yeseh v'yifsach. We put forward an invitation. Whoever needs a place to eat, come and join us. What's the problem? First of all, you've already started the meal. Second of all, who are you talking to? Right, so unless, of course, you have some stowaways under the table, I'm saying, like, the people who are there are already there. So meaning, if you're going to make a real invitation, then, I don't know, do what we do by Shvoch HaMascha. Go to the door, look for people, or perhaps say this before you actually begin the Seder. Why are you making an invitation? Now, Rav Soloveitchik says something amazing. He says, number 9, he says, Yesh La'ayin. So the Rav says, okay, aside from all the technical details, why are you getting involved in the mitzvah of having guests, of Hachnasas Orchim? Hachnasas Orchim is certainly important, hospitality is important, but what does it have to do with the Pesach Seder? So the Rav says something amazing. Skip down to the second paragraph. He says, V'nir lomar, t'hine eved eno yochol hachnas Orchim. If there's one mitzvah that a slave can't do, it's hachnasas orchim, it's hospitality. Why not? D'ha kaim alon, mashe kana eved, kana rabo. V'ein le'eved nechosim, v'gam ein lo bayis, v'lachim maschilim es ha'agada b'hachnasas orchim, v'omrim kol dichvin yeseh v'yechol, t'zeu derech cheirus. L'haro she'ein anu avadim, ela b'nei chorin shalom achlisim orchim. So this is something amazing. An eved can't do hachnasas orchim, why not? Because in order to do Achnasas Orchim, you have to have stuff, right? You have to have a house. You have to have food. An Eved doesn't have the power of ownership. So says the Rav something amazing. Is this an invitation? Of course it's not an invitation. It doesn't make sense. So what is it? Says the Rav, it's a demonstration or a declaration of my new found freedom. I'm going to show you that I am a Ben Chorin. And how am I going to show you that I am a Ben Chorin? That if I wanted to, I can share what I have with others. And something amazing emerges from this, that according to the Rav, the greatest demonstration of freedom and self-autonomy is not what you can do for yourself, but it's what you can do for others. the greatest demonstration of cheiros is my ability not just to further myself as an individual, but again, the greatest way to show that I own something is I can do with it as I want, even to benefit you. So let's take this full circle. So what's happening over here? If we accept the approach of Rav Kook and Rav Goren, then what's really happening over here is, what am I doing when I light my menorah? I'm making the positive declaration, I have a pach shemen munach bichosamo shel kohen gadol. It does not matter. I mean, it doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter what I have or what I haven't done with my life. No matter how high the piles of ruins may be, I have potential to do something great. There are untapped resources within. I light the menorah, I make the declaration that what? That I control the fire does not control me. What is the greatest way to show that you really own your pach shemen? What is the greatest way to show that you really control the fire and the fire does not control you? What's the greatest demonstration of that? Your ability to share it with others. Because the way that I demonstrate true ownership over an idea, an ideal, or an object is my ability to share it with someone else. So Chazal are telling us, lest you think that this idea that I have a pach shemen with the seal of the Kohen Gadol within, lest you think that I rule over the fire doesn't rule over me, lest you think that these are just nice ideas that we could share together in a shir, and they make for nice Hanukkah Divrei Torah, Chazal say, let me show you how real this is, that it even translates into halacha. Once something translates into halacha, that means we're not just talking about nice Divrei Torah. Once something translates into halacha, what does that tell us? It's real. It's real. It's not just a shita, it's not just an idea, it's not just a svara, it's not just an approach. It's real. So once I know that I can share my Ner Chanukah with you, once I know that if you walk by my house, you can make a bracha on my Ner Chanukah, you know what that means? That means I own that Ner. That means I own the Pach Shemen. That means I own the fire. Not just as a nice idea, but a real unequivocal truth of my life. And now that I know that I own that Pach Shemen, and now that I know that I rule over the fire, the Ner Chanukah teaches me that truly the opportunities in life are limitless. So we should hope that Emir Tzashem, in just a few days from now, when we are Zocha, to go ahead and light the Ner Chanukah. So we should hope that Emir Tzashem, we should find the same level of inspiration as our great-grandparents, the Maccabim, did. And Halavai, even if we feel we haven't done enough with our life until now, it's okay. The Pach Shemen is there. It's ready. It's accessible. The seal is ready to be broken. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to fan the flames. And sometimes we become so despondent thinking that we are victims to the circumstances of life. We're not victims to anything. There are many circumstances we can't control. That is true. But the only time we become victims is when we allow ourselves to be passive in the journey of life. When we light the menorah, we are reminded that we control the fire does not control us. All right.